Hi, this is Faith Mitchell, President of Grantmakers in Health. I'd like to welcome you to the latest edition in GIH's podcast series. Our goal is to provide you with an insider's view of what's happening on the front lines of health by hearing from leaders in the field. I hope you enjoy these podcasts and find them insightful as you lead your philanthropic work. This year, GIH is celebrating 35 years of supporting better health through better philanthropy. Since our founding, we have grown into the largest national network dedicated to meeting the needs and concerns of health funders. We're marking this organizational milestone in several ways, including by launching a podcast series called Fresh Perspectives, Voices from the Field. Today, it's my pleasure to speak with Fatima Angelis from the California Wellness Foundation. Fatima, I'm looking forward to hearing about your top-of-mind issues, career path, vision for the future, and any other topic you'd like to cover. To begin with, please introduce yourself and tell us about the California Wellness Foundation and your role there.
Hi, Faith. I'm excited to talk with you, and congratulations to GIH on your 35th anniversary. I am the Vice President of Programs here at the California Wellness Foundation. Cal Wellness is a health funder. You know, our ultimate goal is health equity. We've been around since 1992. We fund all over California. We take a holistic approach to that definition of health and wellness.
Fatima, can you elaborate a bit more on the holistic definition of health that the foundation uses?
Sure. We've always embraced the notion that health is more than just the absence of disease. And in this respect, we really look to the definition the WHO put forward. And in our 25 years, we're celebrating our quarter century anniversary this year, we really have embraced a range of issues that some folks may not consider health. So for example, we were one of the first philanthropic institutions to really make the case that violence is a public health issue and not just a criminal justice issue. We started that work, violence prevention, in 1992, and we continue to this day. Right now, with our advancing wellness strategy, we are looking at all kinds of elements that impact someone's health and well-being. And really that, to us, are the social determinants of health. And you'll see in the grants we make and the strategies that we are pushing out that we're looking at elements like employment and education, in addition to access to health care and violence prevention and the quality of the environment as elements of health and well-being. Sort of that's what we mean around a broad definition of health, that we're looking at, for example, economic outcomes for individuals and families as health outcomes, educational achievement as a health indicator. We're looking at the role of the environment in whether you can access fresh foods, whether you can walk safely in the neighborhood, whether there's social connection between you and your neighbor as elements of health.
Fatima, with the connections that you mentioned that you were making between things like employment and education and the environment and health, have you found that grantees have to be educated about the social determinants of health, or are they already addressing them, in which case they might welcome the fact that the foundation is also recognizing those connections?
Well, I think it's a bit of both. We, at the California Wellness Foundation, we consider ourselves as a responsive grant maker. And what we mean by that is that we're open 24/7 for applicants to submit an application. And so we have that element of our work because we are big believers that solutions to our most difficult problems are often found in communities and led by local leaders. So to answer your question, Faith, I do think that our grantees and other organizations in California who are working with communities, with families, understand deeply that health is much more than your blood pressure or your diet. And so I think when we pushed out Advancing Wellness and they saw that we are looking at education and employment as levers for improving health outcomes, I think they were right there with us. The other benefit is that we are now working with organizations that we've never worked with before, because of this new components of, you know, just these two examples of education and health. And we're learning so much from these organizations about how they work with communities, how they engage policymakers, how they define health and well-being, and it's helping us refine our strategies even more.
Fatima, I've noticed that, especially since last fall's election, Cal Wellness has really used its voice in support of its organizational values. I'm thinking about issues like immigrant rights and access to health care and violence prevention. Many foundations are hesitant to step out in the kind of visible way that Cal Wellness has. So I wanted to dig some more into that topic to get a sense of how you approach taking positions and what the effect has been. So my first question is, if you're willing, what was the internal conversation like among the board and staff? Some boards are very hesitant to take public positions. I'm wondering if you can share some of that experience.
Sure. I'm glad that you've noticed, because I think this has been a very conscious and deliberate shift in the way we do our work. What I mean by that is being louder and using our platform more to share our point of view. That's been a shift for us at Cal Wellness. And it happened because of a number of reasons. One, we have a new CEO came in our midst, Judy Belk, who is a fantastic writer and a gifted communicator. We want to make sure that we are benefiting from the talents, experience, and skills that our new CEO brought to the organization. So that's one. Second, we did a couple of external scans, one through our strategic planning process and another through our regular grantee surveys. And when we were engaged in our planning process for our grant-making program, what came out, feedback from grantees, grant seekers, and other stakeholders, was that they wanted to hear more from the foundation. They wanted to hear our point of view. They appreciated that we highlighted our grantees and shared their stories, but they had wanted to hear more from the foundation because, one, they felt that it helps validate their work and their strategies. Second, that foundations can be heard in ways that perhaps nonprofits and advocates aren't heard, in particular with policymakers. And third, it helps elevate a set of issues that one organization or one grantee can't if the foundation does it. So we heard that loud and clear, and the board saw that and encouraged us to really think about our communications capacity and strategies. And we really embraced that challenge. And so in the last couple of years, we've built out our public affairs unit. We have encouraged staff to engage in all kinds of ways with communicating with grantees and other stakeholders, whether it's meetings or conferences and speaking at conferences, but also social media, in particular Twitter. Social media is new and it develops fast and we're trying to catch up and it's exciting.
Have you seen an impact? Now, you mentioned that grantees had asked for this, and then have you heard back from them now that you've started to do it?
We have. You know, a couple of things. In addition to being more active on Twitter, our CEO, Judy Belk, has written a number of op-eds. She has blogged. Staff have blogged. And so we have heard positive responses from our external stakeholders, including our grantees. One, that's validating. And two, the other effect of this that has been really beneficial to us is that because we're out there more and folks are having a better understanding of our views and our approach, we're being invited to tables that we hadn't ever been because they just hadn't realized that we were working on these issues. And so in many ways, it opened doors for our staff and for our CEO. And that just means we learn more, we engage more, and it makes us a more informed, hopefully more relevant and more responsive funder.
Fatima, has there been any negative feedback? And if there has, how did you handle it?
I don't think we've had any significant negative feedback. And if we had, I think we would handle it in terms of really sticking and reiterating our values and our principles, our approach and our strategies and what we stand for. So we're not going to shy away from that. The other thing that is, I think, important to note, that anytime we blog, anytime we tweet, anytime we do an op-ed, the communication messages are fully vetted, both with our public affairs unit. We have fantastic folks that are partnering and training all of us, but also with legal counsel. So we want to make sure that we stay on the right side of things. We're not shy to controversy. For a long time, we had a program that focused on preventing teen pregnancies, and we certainly attracted a lot of naysayers, and I would say backlash. I think violence prevention and the way our foundation is looking at preventing gun violence in communities has attracted, I think, backlash as well. So we are used to handling dicey situations. Our former CEO and our interim CEO, Cole Wilbur, said, well, if you're not making somebody mad, we may not be doing what we're supposed to be doing.
That's a very healthy attitude.
Yes, in some ways, it's a temperance check to see if we are pushing the dial in ways that we need to. And I have to say, foundations have a lot of room for risk-taking. And I think our board, our CEO certainly wants to make sure that we do all we can to make the changes we need to make. There's a lot of issues in California that need fixing.
That's one of the reasons I'm excited to share your story via this podcast, because dealing with the range of funders that we do at Grantmakers in Health, we encounter many that are cautious, I would say, about taking risks or concerned about how it might affect their stature in the community. And so I think when they can hear a story like yours and realize that a foundation doesn't have to shy away from controversy, and that taking stands and using the foundation's voice can actually open doors and get the foundation invited to new tables, I think that can be a very encouraging story for many of funders. Fatima, I want to switch gears a little bit now from the foundation to you, some of your personal perspectives. You have a long history in philanthropy. You've worked with a number of foundations and also community-based organizations. I'm really interested to hear your ideas about what successful philanthropy looks like.
Thanks for that. I have been around the block a while. The majority of my time has been here with the California Wellness Foundation, and I've just really been grateful to grow alongside this institution. I'm really proud of the work we do here. I think what the successful philanthropy, what successful foundations look like, and I think for us, it really is, at least in my eyes, that we are of value and of service to our grantees, that we are providing the kind of support in the way that our grantees need for the support to be provided. That's one, that our partnership with them allows them to reach their goals. And so I think what that means for us is to be really good listeners and really take their lead. It's allowed us to really be a better informed funder, sort of this approach around being a responsive grant maker, meaning that the majority of grants that we award originate from ideas from communities. That's one element of the work we do. The other piece that we do that I feel like allows us to be a better grant maker is we provide cooperating support. And we've been doing this for a really long time, and I'm glad to know that more funders are doing that. We can only really achieve our mission, the foundation's mission, through partnerships with nonprofit organizations. So it is in our best interest that those institutions are as strong as they can be, that they are sustainable, that they are on the cutting edge of both policy advocacy and practice. And core support allows them to do that, because core support, flexible dollars, they can use it the way they need to, that they can stay true to mission. And we survey our grantees regularly, and they tell us time and time again how valuable that is to their success, to their growth, and to their relevance. So what does a successful philanthropy or foundation look like? I think it's really, to us, it's making sure that we are moving alongside our grantee partners, that we are in service to them, that we are useful to them, that we're not in their way.
I'm glad you brought up core support. I was going to ask you about it if you hadn't, Fatima. My experience with it is when I was at the Hewlett Foundation, which also gave core support, and I agree with you 100%. It is the best way to relate to organizations. Really, it's a measure of trust, and you're putting the decision-making about how to invest the money in their hands. And $1 of core support is probably worth at least $5 of funding for a specific project, because it just goes so much farther and it builds the infrastructure of the organizations.
Yeah. The other thing, too, that I found, because I've been here so long, when I started at the foundation, we were employing an initiative style of grant making. So it was foundation directed. We had a set number of partners. That partnership went on for a number of years. When we switched to core support and to responsive, suddenly the conversations we were having with organizations were radically different. We weren't just asking about outcomes and tracking progress. We were asking questions around, how's your board doing? How do you manage the multiple demands in the organization? What does your staff need? What do you need? Do you need an executive assistant? And it allowed us to better understand what it takes to run a successful nonprofit organization rather than just a project with time-limited outcomes. And so it allowed us to be better grant makers because we understood better what it takes to get change made. A good example is providing core support for policy advocacy organizations. It takes a long time to get a policy win. And it takes an even longer time to make sure that those policy wins actually translate into real wins for communities. Core support allows policy organizations to stay in the game for the long haul. We wouldn't have seen the gains that we've seen in California, for example, around healthcare reform, if those advocacy organizations hadn't been receiving sustained core support from funders like us. You know, we're not the only ones who do core support. But if we want organizations to be stronger, if we want them to stay in the game, if we want them to stay true to mission, you got to give core support.
Amen. That was very compelling. I couldn't agree with you more. Thinking about being a responsive grant maker, this question of how does philanthropy keep up with changing times? If you're a responsive grant maker, do you feel like the evolution of the requests you get is sufficient? Or say at Cal Wellness, do you have other ways of just understanding how the communities that you're working with are evolving?
I mean, I think this is a question we struggle with. We certainly learn a lot from the applications we get and the proposals we receive about what's happening in Californians and what's happening in organizations. We learn a lot from the progress reports that come our way, that we read them faithfully when they come in. But our grant makers also know what's happening around us here in California. We're at conferences all the time. We're reading all the time. We're in conversations with advocates, but also community members all the time. And so we get direction from all kinds of places. But I will say that because we've been in the responsive game and in the core support game for a long time, I think you're right, Faith, when you said that that kind of approach breeds a really high level of trust among this foundation and our grantees. And so we're able to call up our grantees or even folks who we haven't funded in a while and say, hey, what's going on in Riverside? Or what's happening in Fresno? What should we pay attention to? And a good test of that trust happened in the beginning of this year for us. The election results, I would say, was a surprise to many of us here at the foundation. And we quickly realized that we could not enter 2017 in the same way that we had 2016. And we decided as a foundation, the board was super supportive, that we would do something different in the first half of 2017. We essentially paused our regular style of grant making, and we focused on four issues that we felt were the most threatened by the promises of the new administration. And the four were ACA and health reform, safety net, hate violence, and immigrants and immigration. And it was really through our relationships with grantees and folks that we've known in the field for a long time to say, what do you need? How can we get dollars to you quickly? Give us something really fast, which we don't like to do that with our grant seekers and partners because it takes a long time to really craft a good proposal. They were running around. They wanted to respond. They were scared. We were scared. And because we had trusted partners, we were able to make the shift with confidence that our decisions to pause and to focus on these four issues, that it was going to go well because our grantees were telling us that that's what we needed to do. And we did it.
In that process, were there other grantees that were kind of put on pause, I think is what you said. Like, have you been able to get back to them now? Or do you still have that sense of crisis at this stage in the game?
We like to think of ourselves as a well-oiled machine. And we kind of threw a wrench in our process, not only sort of communicating that externally, but also our grants management process. And they were incredible partners for us when we were trying to do something really responsive to the times. I think we were worried that grant seekers and grantees who weren't working on the four issues I mentioned would be upset that we weren't paying attention to them. And the opposite was true. When we would say we really can't make this grant to you right now because we're focused on these four things, overwhelmingly the response was like, we'll call you later. What you're doing is absolutely important. Go. We have gotten back to those issues that we have put on pause, and we'll continue to do that in the coming year. So I think we're in pretty good shape.
So again, using your perspective, Fatima, as a seasoned grant maker, one who's worked on the East Coast and the West Coast and on a variety of issues, and not limiting yourself to what Cal Wellness does, what are some things that health funders should be doing that they are not doing? Like, what are some things GIH can be telling health funders about in the coming months?
Well, a couple of things about that. And I think this new political environment has really made all of us here at the foundation think a bit about what we ought to be doing differently to make sure that California's future is a bright one. In addition to the broken record that I'm spinning around responsiveness and core support, I think a couple of things. One, it is so clear to me in the first half of this year that nonprofit leadership matters so much. They really are the true heroes of what's happening in the country right now around organizing, movement building, providing services, and really putting forward bold solutions to the kind of entrenched issues that we're seeing now. And so investments in nonprofit leadership is really important, and really looking at up-and-coming leaders who can carry the work maybe in a different way, because these are different times, is one. The other piece that I think even more loud and clear is important is really looking at diversity, equity, and inclusion in everything we do, from who we hire at foundations to help to make decisions about who gets funding, to the board that we have to help guide us through these challenging times, but also to the partners that we seek out, who's organizing, who's on their board, who's providing the services, who's collecting data. So I'd say leadership, diversity, equity, and inclusion is one. The other thing I'll say too is how important real-time data is to really inform the direction of our work and making sure that everybody is counted, and the census is coming up. And so I think that's what's on our mind right now, so that we can see deeper into what the numbers are telling us, so that we can make better decisions for our foundation and supporting organizations in the way they need to be supported. And then lastly, I think if you look at what's happening, even just in healthcare, how important it is to continue to support funding advocacy organizations to really push back against bad decisions and bad policy.
Terrific. That is a great list. And we can make use of that in the months to come. I said that was my last question, but then I realized it was my next to last question, because my last question is about the move. So you guys moved a couple of weeks ago, and now you're in downtown Los Angeles, if I'm not mistaken. So what do you think? You're out of the suburbs and right in the thick of things, and how's it going?
Well, you know, we're a week out from the move. We moved to downtown Los Angeles, and you are totally right when you say we're right in the thick of things, in the midst of things. It's going great. We love our new space, and we're proud of our new space. There was a lot of board input and staff input in the design of our new home. And so we're proud of that collective and collaborative effort. We feel excited to work there, and we're even more excited to invite folks to come and meet us at our new home in downtown Los Angeles. Already, it's been a terrific place to have meetings, but also things are happening in downtown LA. So when I was there last week, I was able to walk to a number of meetings and then get back to the office and do some work, where in the past, I think it would have taken me half a day to drive from the valley to the meeting, another half a day to get back to the office. I think it's going to be a great, great place for us to continue to grow and develop.
I look forward to seeing how you become like a neighborhood center almost, because I'm sure that's what will happen as your relationships evolve.
We hope so too. We're thrilled with that possibility.
Fatima, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. Thank you for sharing your ideas and insights and perspectives. And I look forward to seeing you in the next few months.
It was great to talk with you, Faith. And we continue to be a big fan of Grantmakers in Health. GIH makes us better grantmakers. So thank you for all that you do.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this podcast. For more information about Grantmakers in Health, visit us online at gih.org.